Ahab's Death, Chapter 89. A guest has come to visit Ahab. He is a very distinguished visitor. The king of Judah has come to stay for some time with Ahab and Jezebel. While Jeroboam and Baasha reigned over Israel, there was continual war between Israel and Judah. This was really a civil war, a war between brothers, because the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel actually should have been one kingdom. Therefore, these wars were so terrible, for the inhabitants of both kingdoms were Israelites. They belonged to the same nation. Happily, these wars are now over. Omri, the father of Ahab, entered into a peace treaty with the king of Judah. At this time, Ahab sits upon the throne of Israel, and Jehoshaphat reigns over Judah. Jehoshaphat is a God-fearing king. Not one king reigned over Israel, the kingdom of the 10 tribes, who worshipped the Lord uprightly. But there were a few converted God-fearing kings who reigned over Judah, the kingdom of the 2 tribes. When we begin to tell you about the kings of Judah, you will hear more about this. Jehoshaphat is one of those God-fearing kings of whom we will hear more later. At this time, remember, Jehoshaphat became a very good friend of Ahab. Yes, he even consented to the marriage of his oldest son to the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. This is a pity. The God-fearing Jehoshaphat should not have been so friendly with the ungodly family of Ahab and Jezebel. The servants of the Lord and those enslaved by the devil must not be friendly with each other. Jehoshaphat is a guest of Ahab. These two monarchs speak about many things. It has been 3 years since Ahab has defeated Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. Then Ahab allowed Ben-Hadad to go free and made a covenant with him. That was not permitted, was it? Upon this occasion, Ben-Hadad had promised to return everything which formerly belonged to Israel. But when Ben-Hadad again had returned safely into his own land, he broke his promise and would not do what he had agreed upon. This displeased Ahab. The city of Ramoth-Gilead lies on the other side Jordan, in that portion of land where the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the one-half tribe of Manasseh lived. This city is a city of refuge. Ramoth-Gilead was conquered by the Syrians and had to be returned by Ben-Hadad according to his promise. 3 years have passed. Still, Ahab did not have this city of refuge returned to him. Ahab and Jehoshaphat speak about these troublesome matters. The king of Israel is angry and says peevishly, "If Ben-Hadad does not return Ramoth-Gilead to me, I will take it from him. He must return it, otherwise I will fight for it." He suddenly asks Jehoshaphat, "Will you go with me? Will you help me?" Immediately the king of Judah answers, "Yes, you can depend on me. I shall muster my army. Together we will drive the Syrians out of Ramoth-Gilead." Ahab is pleased and doesn't doubt but that the outcome will be successful, especially with the help of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. But Jehoshaphat is not so sure of success. He first wants to know if the Lord will help them. Do you understand? This is the great difference between Ahab and Jehoshaphat. Ahab does not need the Lord. He thinks he can manage things alone. Jehoshaphat knows he can do nothing without the Lord. Jehoshaphat knows that without the blessing of the Lord, everything will be a failure. Therefore, Jehoshaphat tells Ahab, and they should ask the Lord if he approves it. He says, "Inquire, I pray thee, at the word of the Lord today." Immediately, Ahab agrees. Why, yes, he will do it. Why not? He will ask the prophets for advice. And he calls them. In a great open space near the gate of Samaria sits Ahab and Jehoshaphat clothed in royal apparel. Several hundred people stand around them. Who are all these people? They are the prophets of Ahab. He didn't have one or two, but 400 prophets. They are not the real prophets of the Lord. They are lying prophets, false prophets. Ahab asks them, "Shall I go up to Ramoth-Gilead, and shall I be victorious?" The unanimous answer of these prophets is, "Yes, king, go up to Ramoth-Gilead. The Lord shall give you the victory in this battle. You will defeat the Syrians." Triumphantly, Ahab looks at King Jehoshaphat. It is as though he would say, "What do you say about it? Is your mind at ease now?" But Jehoshaphat is far from satisfied. Dissatisfied, he stares before him. He doesn't trust it. Neither does he believe it. He knows they are not prophets who have been called by the Lord, but they are the prophets of the golden calves of Dan and Bethel, which were set up by Jeroboam, the first king over the 10 tribes. He asks hesitatingly, "Is there not here a prophet of the Lord?" Ahab is disappointed, for he hears the mistrust in the voice of Jehoshaphat. "Yes," he says reluctantly, "there is one. But I do not like him. I hate him. He never says anything good to me, but always evil." "Yes, Ahab, that is true. But it is your own fault, because you are an ungodly, wicked king. And for that reason, this prophet cannot prophesy anything good for you." "Ah, you mustn't say that," Jehoshaphat answers. "I would like to know what he will say about it." Ahab is not pleased about it, but he doesn't dare refuse. He and Jehoshaphat must remain friendly. "Go get him," Ahab commands. One of his officers goes for the prophet. "Who is this prophet?" Perhaps you immediately will answer, "Elijah, of course." This time you are wrong. Ahab does not mean Elijah, but Micaiah. You must not think this is Micah, the prophet who wrote a few chapters of the Bible which follow the book of Jonah. There were two prophets whose names were similar. The officer makes haste to bring Micaiah to the king. He runs straight to the prison. To the prison? Yes. Ahab had put him in prison because the prophet had admonished him on account of his manifold sins. While the officer was returning with Micaiah, he says to him, "All the prophets prophesy Ahab will be victorious. You must be wise and say the same." But Micaiah shakes his head decidedly and answers, "No, I only shall say that which I must say in the name of God." Perhaps the officer draws up his shoulders. He cannot do more than tell Micaiah to advise the prophet what was best for him. In the meantime, Ahab and Jehoshaphat eagerly await the return of the officer who has gone for Micaiah. The prophet soon stands before these two kings. Ahab looks at him in anger, but in the eyes of Jehoshaphat there is respect. and compassion for the servant of the Lord. He thinks it terrible of Ahab to lock in prison a servant, a prophet of Israel's God. Micaiah, Ahab asks, shall we go up to battle against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall we forbear? Immediately Micaiah answers, go up, and the Lord shall give you the victory over the Syrians. Micaiah says this in a mocking way, and Ahab does not believe it. He can feel the prophet does not mean what he says. Micaiah, Ahab says sternly, you must speak the truth. Did the Lord tell you this? Then Micaiah looks steadfastly at him and answers, I saw all Israel scattered upon the hills. I saw Israel as a flock of sheep which have no shepherd. Oh, what does Micaiah mean with this? Children, the shepherd is the king of Israel, Ahab. Now Micaiah would say he saw the soldiers of Israel without a shepherd, hence without a king. This means Ahab shall be slain in the battle. Ahab immediately understands the meaning of Micaiah's words. In anger, he says to Jehoshaphat, do you see? Didn't I tell you? He again prophesies evil against me. He never speaks a good word for me. One of the lying prophets slaps Micaiah in the face. Ahab sees this, but doesn't say a word. He permitted Micaiah to be smitten. Embittered, he orders the officer to return Micaiah to prison, and he calls to the officer, remember, Micaiah cannot have anything except a slice of bread and some water. Cruel, isn't it? Micaiah did not deserve this treatment. He still would warn the king, but Ahab would not listen to this warning. Ahab will go to battle in spite of the warning. Jehoshaphat has no desire to go. But because he has promised he would help Ahab, he isn't courageous enough to refuse. The arrows whiz through the air. The soldiers who are wounded by the arrows fall to the ground and lie there moaning. Many die from their wounds. The fighting is furious between the Syrians under Ben-Hadad and the Israelites under the leadership of Ahab and Jehoshaphat. War is such a terrible thing, boys and girls. When God created the world, there was no war. Everything was good, very good. That the people now kill each other is because of sin. Notwithstanding the warning of the Lord, Ahab and Jehoshaphat went up to Ramoth-Gilead with their armies. Before the battle began, Ahab told his confederate, Jehoshaphat, he would not clothe himself in royal apparel. He would wear ordinary soldier's clothing. He does this so that the Syrians would not recognize him. He is secretly afraid of losing his life. By doing this, he hopes he will return alive from the battlefield. But Jehoshaphat is clothed in his royal apparel. It is not wise of Jehoshaphat, because the captains of the Syrian army will think he is Ahab. Ben-Hadad said to his soldiers, you must do your very best to kill or capture the king of Israel. Fight against Ahab and push your assault exclusively at him. Syrian warriors storm over the fields. Ben-Hadad also has 32 chariots. They all ride in the direction of Jehoshaphat and are coming nearer to him. All before long, they shall capture Jehoshaphat. Why are you there, King Jehoshaphat? You don't belong there. You have no business there. If you had remained in Jerusalem, you would have been safe." The God-fearing king of Judah did not stay at home. He is now in the midst of the greatest danger. However, when Jehoshaphat can see no deliverance, he calls in his agony unto the Lord for help. And the Lord answers him. Suddenly the Syrians see that the king whom they are pursuing so vehemently is not Ahab. They turn their chariots around, and Jehoshaphat is at once delivered from the danger of death. Even if Jehoshaphat did go to Ramoth-Gilead without the Lord still helps him and delivers him in his distress. The Syrians hunt over the entire battlefield for Ahab, the king of Israel, but they cannot find him anywhere. Where is Ahab? He is on the battlefield, but he cannot be found so easily because, as you know, Ahab had disguised himself. Didn't he clothe himself with the clothing of a common soldier? The eyes of the enemy cannot find him, but God can find him, and he sees him. We see a Syrian soldier walking about. Perhaps he had already shot all his arrows except one. Carelessly, he puts this last arrow into his bow and shoots it without aiming at anything. If he had known who was to be shot with this last arrow, he would have rejoiced. This wild, unaimed arrow hits Ahab. Ahab receives a deadly wound while he is standing in his chariot. He stays upon the battlefield and tries to remain standing in his chariot, but at last he sinks to the floor, exhausted because of loss of blood, and he dies. In the meantime, night is approaching. The Israelites realize they have lost the battle. They begin to flee. Everyone seeks a safe place, trying to save himself from death. They are as a flock of sheep, which have no shepherd. Their king is dead. The word of the Lord spoken by Micaiah the prophet is fulfilled. Ahab's friends ride with his body to Samaria and bury him there. The chariot upon which Ahab had ridden is stained with blood. They bring it outside the city of Samaria and wash it in a pool. Unnoticed, a few dogs prowl nearby and greedily lick up this blood. Elijah the prophet had said to Ahab in the vineyard of Naboth, "The dogs shall lick your blood." This word of the Lord also was fulfilled. O children, the Lord is righteous. The Lord is an avenger of sin. Never forget this.